Welcome back to Every Horror Movie on Netflix. It's Shark Week, motherfucker. I'm Steven. I'm here with Chris, my faithful co-host.
Hello!
He's a little under the weather.
I'm so sick.
Patrick can't be with us today, but in his stead, we have a special guest from a podcast that we love very much called It Slays. Our good friend Mike is here. Hi, Mike.
Hi, it's me. How is everyone?
We're good. Oh my God.
I'm good.
Chris is all right. Could be better.
Could be better. Could be worse. I was at the devil's door last week and now I just have sexy voice. So it could be worse.
Mike, man, so sorry about what happened when I tried to be on your podcast about a month ago.
Oh, that was an absolute string of catastrophes, wasn't it?
You referred to it as a fiasco. We were supposed to talk about Toby Hooper's TV movie I'm Dangerous Tonight, and I'm so sorry I couldn't be there to talk about that piece of shit.
I know, and we really missed you. I was like, guys, this would have been Steven's just, y'all were like steaming piles and
yeah, it was a real shame, but I'm glad that you can be here to discuss this month's pick, Under Paris, new shark movie.
Under Paris.
French.
Under Paris. Under Paris.
And we'll get into that, but we always like to do a little horror catch-up, but since we do this monthly, we end up talking about a lot of stuff. And I think we have some shared experience of things that we've watched, read, experienced in the last couple of months that are horror-adjacent or otherwise. What do we even start with? I know we all saw Beetlejuice, and I think that was Chris's maybe first experience with Mr. BJ himself, right?
No way.
Well, I've seen 85% of the first Beetlejuice across 10 viewings on TV. I don't think I ever saw the whole thing. That became clear to me watching the second one when they're making references to things that I was unaware of from the first film. But I felt like I got it more or less. And, the new one was good more or less, kind of outstayed its welcome for me, but God bless them for being a little creative.
On the Amon scale, what would you give it? A view it, a cue it, or a screw it?
Oh, it's a cue it. It's a cue it. There's so many spooky Halloween sight gags that it's tempting to give it a view it just because we're in October, but let no one fool you. It's a cue it.
That's kind of my thoughts as well. I don't know. I mean, it's pretty inoffensive, but I found it really kind of slow and plodding for the first hour or so. And my biggest takeaway is it's cool to see Tim Burton and I've seen some interviews with him. It seems like he really cares about having fun making movies again, finally. And he was my hero growing up. And I still really love his early run of, the first, six or seven movies. I like the return to practical effects and all that. But I don't know. This looks like anybody could have directed it. When I go to see a Tim Burton movie, I expect every shot to have something striking about it. And this seemed like it was kind of made for TV in the vein of that Wednesday show that I still haven't seen. But
You're not missing anything.
What did you think of it, Mike?
I mean, I'm of two minds. I think I overhyped myself on it because growing up, Beetlejuice was my, bought the tape at McDonald's or something and just watched it over and over. I was sick and stayed home from school. That was going on, and it was just and rewind.
Kind of same, yeah.
And I feel like there was a little bit of life in it, and you could kind of see that he really wanted to kind of put his soul into it, but I just feel like it really did fall short. It's just the fucking, I guess he was reaching for the stars and he reached the top of the mailbox.
there's definitely like too many subplots and side characters. I know you texted me about Monica Bellucci being totally wasted in it before I saw it.
Wasted!
Totally wasted. She's there to look hot because she's Tim Burton's girlfriend. You know, there's a lot of disposable stuff in it. But if you listen to the Best Movies Never Made podcast, which I know Patrick is also a fan of, I got him on board. They did a two-part episode with Mallory O'Meara and I forget who else, where they talk about every script for a sequel to Beetlejuice that they could find in archives. And this is way better than any of them sounded. So, you know, points for trying, I guess. I know we all also saw, this was the buzz of the town, the buzz of the business a couple weeks ago, but The Substance, the Coralie Fargeet movie, she directed Revenge back in 2018, 2019, I think, Shudder original that was really good, starring Demi Moore. This is a movie about a woman who only has to work every other week, which is my dream. Groan. I think we were all big fans of this one, right? We can safely recommend this to our community, our listeners.
Absolutely. Literally, best theatrical experience I have probably had in a year, at least. Like, must see.
It was the best movie, best recent release that I've seen since at least Nope, but I think it's better than Nope. And yeah, it's hard for me to get that excited about a movie, but it was great. Substance was great. I'd recommend it. I won't recommend it to everybody, but I'd recommend it to our audience 1,000%. Even if it's the smart take I had on that is it's so on the nose, it makes Barbie look like Donnie Darko.
Okay. I'll be unpacking that for the rest of the week, but I think I see where you're going there. Yeah, I fucking loved it. It was like it was plucked from my dreams. Every single decision, design, or otherwise in this thing was like totally made for me. It had a lot of the stuff. It even references that movie, the Larry Cohen movie, and some of the set design. It had a lot of like the Stuart Gordon, Brian Usna, Reanimator from Beyond, Society goopiness.
Oh, Society, yes.
Big Society energy. Just absolutely amazing. And I think it's worth discussing on this show because, you know, I feel like this thing got a lot of buzz, but maybe in more of like an inside baseball kind of way, if you're like us and you're reading the horror trades, you know, pretty regularly. It got a limited theatrical release. It was financed by Mubi, of all things, and is going to be streaming on Mubi, so I don't really see much of a life for it, you know, beyond the theatrical run unless people like us talk about it. I think even despite Demi Moore's star power, I knew people who were like, oh, I want to see the new Demi Moore movie, and then they found out what it was and decided not to check it out. So I'm happy to give it 5 minutes here to shine, so hopefully more of our fans who haven't seen it will check it out. I think it's like one of the most special movies I've seen, at least theatrically, in at least 5 years. Amazing stuff.
Any movie that starts with the stars on the screen addressing the camera and saying thanks for supporting our movie is a movie I want to see.
It's good shit. I have one more thing and then I'll throw it to you guys to see what else you have. I caught up finally with In a Violent Nature. This is a slasher from the slasher's perspective that's on Shudder. I heard really good things about it. I heard it was kind of like if Terrence Malick directed Friday the 13th. And that's pretty on point, except that I will say the whole slasher from the slasher's perspective angle to it is kind of inconsistent. I felt like the script could have used another pass or two, maybe, and there were some scenes that took me out of the experience. But I think it's good for what it is. It's just not for me. I don't like slashers that are just like mean-spirited kill after mean-spirited kill without a story to hang its hat on, and this really doesn't have a story. Also, characters make really stupid decisions, but there are some people who show up later in this movie that should have a much better idea of what's going on and turn it into a more interesting drama than it turns out to be. So I don't know. I give that a cue. If you like the Friday the 13th series and you want to see what that's like from Jason's perspective, could be fun for you.
I've had that on my list for ever. I mean, it just seems sort of strange in a way because I'm like, half of these movies you get about 10 minutes from the killer's perspective anyway. It sort of seems like a redundant idea, you know?
True. Well, to better flesh out what this thing is for anybody who might be curious, you're spending a lot of time looking over the shoulder of the killer as he's, like, wandering through the woods. And it's absolutely gorgeous. There's some wonderful photography in this movie, but, you know, that's only compelling for so long before you start to kind of pick apart its shortcomings.
We're not arriving early, or we're not arriving late and leaving early with this one.
No. Yeah, as far as the catch-up goes, though, I think that's all I will mention. Do either of you have anything else you want to plug before we get into the feature at hand?
I'll plug something briefly. I think I meant to do this an episode or two ago. I watched The First Omen.
Oh, right. How was that?
And The First Omen... surprisingly good. I mean, you check out the First Omen, you expect it's going to be dog shit, right? And it wasn't. Was it great? No, but it had very good cinematography and atmosphere. The lead actress had a very good layered performance, and I was interested and drawn in and creeped out a little bit by this thing, and it was just so much better than it had any right to be, and I want people to check it out if they haven't checked it out. It still is laughably dumb in some points where they're like, they hit the Omen franchise button, especially at the end, like the last scene is like a completely tacked on scene. You couldn't make this shit up, where the priest is like, they gave him a name, it's Damien, and then that guy cuts to black.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, Jesus.
But other than that, it's a good ride.
So I'm hearing that it's not the alien Romulus of the Omen movies.
No.
I did see Alien Romulus.
I feel like you guys didn't like that movie very much.
I saw that since Alien our last Romulus? Episode, no. And yeah, I cannot recommend that film in good conscience. You got anything, Mike? Anything you want to talk about that should be on our radar?
I think it was like the last episode or the episode before. And you guys mentioned Don't Breathe because it was also, yeah. And Colton decided on our show that we were going to do an episode on it. So I rewatched that for the first time since seeing it in theaters. Loved it in theaters. I smoked a joint right before I went in. So it was one of those like white knuckle, I'm having a panic attack movie experiences, which.
Oh, no.
Both good and bad, but you know, it was one of, like, it was just absolutely unforgettable. Rewatching it on my TV, streaming it off of, you know, let's just call it a site of ill repute, wasn't quite the same experience. It didn't have the rewatchability to me as something like his Evil Dead remake, but I just have such a like hardcore love for that Evil Dead remake that I just feel like everything else he does is just gonna fall short. So yeah, rewatch that, kind of, you know, was like maybe a little bit disappointed with it, but I feel like if I watched it on like maybe like a 4K or some Blu-ray or something, you know, maybe that'll, I just feel like he has such a strong visual that watching like a bootleg version of it just wasn't the way to go. The only other thing really that I've watched recently other than The Substance was Carrie in 4K, which,
oh, nice,
blew my mind. One of my favorite movies of all time. You know, obviously, Stephen King. Like,
well, there's a poster over your shoulder that our listeners obviously cannot see, but there's the proof
that you of Carrie. I won that from Scream Factory, actually. Thank you, Instagram. The only thing I've ever won. yeah, rewatched that in 4K. It was phenomenal. I'll tell you right now. Just scraping all my pennies together and upgrading to a 4K TV was the best decision I ever made.
I'm on my way there.
I'm like, Steven, I'm always trying to like fucking sell you on this shit here. Get into 4K.
Yeah, Steven, if you want to be sold, come on over and we'll watch Avatar The Way of Water on 4K Blu-ray. And you'll say, holy shit, I've never seen anything that looks this good, including my real life.
Wow, that's, yeah. I have to see the first Avatar, actually, before we do that.
Yeah, but it doesn't... I won't argue with you there, but it doesn't look as good on 4K as The Way of Water.
Okay. I'll take your word
But you'll just
it.
Be so, like, spellbound, you won't even care about the plot.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of water... that's yeah, a hell of a segue.
Right? I did that on purpose.
Chris, tell us a little bit about... Set us up for Under Paris, please.
All right. Well, first of all, I'll tell you that I picked this movie because I had heard, I guess I heard some positive buzz about it. And it was sort of timely. It came out around the Olympics. And it has the movie's basically about a large shark that, they cleaned up the Seine to run the Olympics in Paris. And the premise of this film is kind of like, well, what if they cleaned up the Seine and then some big shark migrated into it from the ocean and caused chaos? And so that's basically what we have here. We have a prologue that establishes that there's a beastly shark in the Pacific garbage patch who encounters our hero, who is a marine researcher. And then years later, because there's a horrible incident where the shark kills this woman's entire dive team. Years later, this shark is picked up, having migrated all the way around the globe to the waterways of Paris. And wouldn't you know it, they are just about to fire the gun to start the very Olympics-coded Paris triathlon, yes, where they're going to have 400 swimmers from different countries in the river. So this is obviously a big problem because there's a killer shark there. So our marine researcher, Sophia, teams up with some hippie environmentalists and a lot of French police, river police specifically, to try to investigate this ecological anomaly and stop the shark before it snack.
Oh, not the snack.
Well done, Chris.
That's your film.
I love that's Damn. Your movie. Would you view it cute or screw it? I love the term Olympics coded because that's pretty much what was going through my mind this whole time.
I'm not gonna lie, it took me an embarrassingly long time into viewing this movie to realize that it wasn't indeed the Olympics. I was like, oh, it's a triathlon. I literally was like waiting for the fucking like rings to come up somewhere and I was like, oh, wait, yeah, there's probably a copyright on that shit.
That's fine. Yeah, and I think they do mention the Olympics, but, like, they do it in some way where they can, like, acknowledge that a lot of what's happening with the political environment involves the upcoming Olympics, but they don't actually depict the Olympics at all. So they kind of have it both ways. But, yeah, Olympics coded for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious that the mayor is that who she is? Like what? Yeah. She mentions that there were going to be, I thought it was the Olympics and she's like, there are going to be 1,000 people on this river. And I was like, only 1,000, like I expected bigger stakes. If there's sharks involved
in the water, I think. Right.
Oh, I don't know. I thought she was just talking about the spectators.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, it's a major event. But we start over in the Pacific, at the Pacific garbage patch, and an opening sequence that I really liked, kind of. I had actually tried to watch this before I picked it for the show and watched through like the first 20 minutes and then had to go to sleep. But the opening sequence, compelling both times. There's a beautiful cinematography, some of the best since Avatar The Way of Water.
Wow.
They're not shooting dry for wet on this thing either. They are diving
for real. Here's that term again.
they're shooting wet for wet. And the diving was pretty accurate too. So what more can you want?
That opening scene was beautifully lit. Oh my god! Like,
yeah,
just the way that the garbage was just lit like in a stunning way, which sounds so fucking ridiculous. But I was like, this garbage looks fucking good.
Yeah, they're gonna put out tourism ads about the garbage patch now. we're going to be, people are going to be putting more garbage into the ocean to make the patch bigger.
Well, it's the ultimate dumpster dive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris, I had you in the back of my mind. I mean, obviously, because I knew we were going to talk about this movie, but your diving expertise, your shark knowledge, yeah, it's comforting to me to hear that a lot of this stuff, at least the diving aspect of it, seemed to be pretty accurately done, that there was some care taken.
I haven't done my own research, but there is one element that's very significant to the entire movie that I think is complete bullshit. And that is that I don't think you can GPS track a marine animal like a shark because GPS doesn't work underwater.
Oh, really? And why would that be?
Yes. Because water absorbs electromagnetic spectrum waves like there's no tomorrow.
Interesting. I was also curious, too, our protagonist, and again, listeners, I watched this movie a week ago, and I've also recently been sick, so my memory's a little fuzzy. How far down do you have to be dragged underwater before you start bleeding out of your ears and nose?
Could be as shallow as 15, 20 feet.
Okay, all right. Well, then that tracks. That answers my question. I thought that seemed a little unrealistic, but maybe not.
No, it's just about the, I mean, she gets dragged down deep in this prologue, but it's just about the pressure gradient and if you're adding air to your middle ear to equalize the pressure on both sides of your eardrum.
Honestly, one of the most horrific blood lettings in this movie, as far as I'm concerned. It's just the the ear trauma. I was like, oh my God. I didn't know what I was
doing,
obviously, but...
And if you dive, you can relate to that sort of pressure and pain buildup. And even if you don't dive, if you've ever swam and dived in a swimming pool, if you go to the bottom of a 8 or 10 foot swimming pool, you're going to start feeling that pain on your eardrum.
That's true.
Yeah, I used to swim until I was like probably 16 or 17. And it was even just like a 12 foot pool. It was, I could feel it. I could feel my ears. It was just like, well, God, it made my hair stand on end.
I'm interested in the past tense there. What? Why don't you swim anymore?
trauma.
What happened, Mike?
Almost drowning. Also, I do have issues with my ears, hilariously, which is why I found this so horrific. And, like, I used to swim a lot and then would get water in them and I couldn't hear for, like, a week.
Oh, yeah, that's
and a thing. It started happening regularly. And they were like, well, we could do, and I was just like, no, don't do anything. Also, I used to have to swim with a nose plug because it just, all the holes in my head are like very easily filled.
You're very porous.
I'm an extremely porous individual, which explains a lot about me.
I just wondered if maybe you took a swim in like the night swim pool or something and just encountered an ancient ghoul and couldn't go back into the water.
Oh, God, I wish it was just, you know, nasty swimming instructors, honestly.
Well, that's basically what happens to Sophia here, you know, encounters a nasty ghoul. She is our hero, and I did think that it was really cool that ostensibly... the main character is like a 45-year-old marine biologist. I think they shortchange her a lot in this movie in favor of the CW cop characters.
Oh, we're not going to slander him because he's the, for my money, he's the real visual treat of this film. But
okay, well, attractive as they are, like many, like everyone on The Flash or Arrow, he may be attractive, but it's a pretty upsetting scene in the beginning where, you know, they're communing with this magnificent shark, and then the shark seems to be growing more than they expected it to, and then it kind of turns and just devours everybody. And obviously causes trauma for our hero, Sophia, who then moves to, you know, France and becomes a aquarium interpreter, and it's kind of funny because she's giving her speech and there's like schoolboys in the crowd looking up her trauma accident history on Wikipedia for some reason, and they're like, is it true your whole team got killed by a shark? And she's like, I gotta take a break. Didn't seem like something that kids might, you know, be looking up on their phones at the aquarium, but what do I know?
Oh yeah, it's just a total thing to like go on a like museum tour or something like that and just be like, hang on now, let me Google my tour guide. Let me Google this random like 40-odd-year-old woman.
Yeah.
You've got to be giving a pretty uncompelling presentation for kids to be doing that.
Yeah. And then, you know, she finds out in short order that these environmentalists have tracked this shark named Lilith to Paris. And she's like, well, that's impossible. Well, spoiler alert, it's possible. But something that I thought this movie did not do well, like, it sets all this up and then it really doesn't do a lot with the concept of like, oh, this shark like killed all your friends, possibly killed your husband. You have trauma from this shark specifically. It's kind of just a shark for the entire movie. And that sort of relationship with our hero completely is non-consequential.
This ain't Jaws.
I know. I really wanted a shot of her like getting in the water with like a spear and just taking it on, you know, like Jaws 4, you know.
Well, we should say too, I mean, this might be an interesting spark for a conversation. You know, we've watched some shark movies for the podcast, Chris. I know we saw at least Three-Headed Shark Attack. Anything else that you can think of?
47 meters down.
I had never seen Jaws until July of this year. I've seen rip-offs of Jaws before I had actually sat down to watch Jaws. And it was obviously, it's a masterpiece. Mike, I think you have a very similar experience.
Oh, yeah. Watching it on my phone, by the way, on the bus.
I wasn't going to call you out for that, but I'm glad you mentioned
no,
it.
No, listen, I'll out myself. I'm not ideal, but like the fact that it still like made my hair stand on it on an iPhone 13 at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, so I'm a bad horror fan, but I love that I at least have that context now when we watch a shark movie. And yeah, there's some interesting comparisons here. I do feel like the mayor in this film is like a carbon copy of the mayor from Jaws.
Yeah. Same dynamic going on where she's like, you want me to close the river right before the biggest triathlon the city's ever had.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's just like a mirror from, you know, except it's like upgraded from like small town, you know. Where was Jaws again? Was that Maine?
New York, I think.
Amityville? Amity something?
Amity Island.
Is it? I don't even know if it's a fictional area or not.
I just assumed it was fictional. Some random place they made up. But, you know, you're a little rinky, dinky, small town.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, like, Paris is so hard up that they can't cancel this event for, like, a major public safety concern that no one is willing to take seriously. I don't know if there's, like, a political message in there or not. Probably not, because this mostly felt like a Gerard Butler movie, but I would love to have that perspective.
Well, that's just the thing, because nobody takes it seriously and nobody believes it, because a shark being in the Seine should be ecologically impossible.
Yes.
But this is a possibly a eco-horror movie in that now it's possible. The wildlife has adapted. And we even get that title card that I thought was...
Oh, my God.
was pretty funny.
Based on the words of Charles Darwin, not a direct quote.
There's some sort of paraphrasing of Darwin that's like, the most badass animal isn't the most badass one, but the one that can adapt most to change. And then instead of actually attributing it to Charles Darwin, because he didn't say that, they're like... based on Charles Darwin. This was the vibe.
We had this quote and no amount of Googling could actually bring it up, so we're just gonna slap this
it's the survival of the fittest theory, but like tailored to this movie and suspiciously credited to Charles Darwin. That really gave me a laugh. I was hoping this movie would provide even more laughs since it set the tone that way, but, you know, we'll get to that in the spoiler room.
But for all those errors, it's not really a movie that I think, at least for me, and I'm someone who's extremely worried about climate change and someone who looks for political themes in pretty much everything I watch, I did not see this effective as any sort of climate movie or message movie or even really having, I mean, there's the garbage patch, you see that, but this movie does not feel like a warning about climate change. If anything, it seems like it's about the garbage patch.
No, I'm glad to hear that from you, because I felt like there were a lot of climate change dog whistles in this movie that never paid off. And I was like, am I missing something? But yeah, I think we're on the same page about this.
I even feel like it kind of has the opposite effect, which I won't go into yet. We'll save that for the spoiler room. But
oh, I think I know what you're getting at.
Because of one scene later in the movie, I feel like it's actually maybe even like talking down to people who are concerned about climate change.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. I thought that scene was in poor taste.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, especially after the opening scene, again, like, I was right there with you. Like, to me, it was this stunning, and I was like, okay, this is setting the tone, and I'm also, you know, very cognizant of, like, you know, especially, I don't have children, but I have three godkids, and so I'm always thinking of, like, fuck, you know, what's this place going to be like in 20 years, or is it going to be? And, yeah, I was kind of, like, hoping that it was setting up those dominoes, and then, you know, kind of by the time you got to, like, the second and third acts, it just really just went down the toilet.
And do you live by the ocean?
Yes, I literally live on an island out in the middle of the ocean, essentially. Not the middle. Mm-hmm. It feels like the middle because it takes like a 14-hour ferry ride to get to land again.
We'll never, the three of us will never meet in person.
14 hours.
Like, I think we can safely say that.
Oh, I want to. I'll take that 14-hour ferry ride.
Well,
fuck yeah.
I mean, listen, you've got two tips. We've got two tips. Or
that's not why I'm going there.
What are we
there.
Talking about now?
And if you go from one point of the island to the mainland of Canada, I'm Canadian, by the way, it takes about 5 hours on a ferry, and then but you're kind of up in the middle of nowhere, essentially, and you'd have to drive for at least half a day to a full day to get to like a city. But then the other end, you go down and you're going to spend, you know, 14, 15 hours on a ferry, but you're getting off at a major port. So, and then one end, and it's the same thing. Like one end of the island is like kind of complete, just communities with 100, 400 people right on the water. It's very much it's so funny because when I was watching Jaws, it was very much like, oh, a lot of the communities on my island are essentially that little Amity or whatever from Jaws.
Yeah, no, that's
the vibe.
That's a carbon copy of New England. Yeah,
and we're talking about Newfoundland, right?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. Indeed. That's amazing. So has living in Newfoundland on the ocean giving you any sort of wisdom or insights into the environment, climate change, or aquatic animals such as sharks?
Well, it taught me not to fuck with anything in the ocean, first of all.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Listen, you don't...
I would ask for details, but this sounds like the trauma story.
Oh, no. Oh, listen, I have a lot of trauma stories from falling out of boats into water or being thrown out of boats, depending. And it's actually funny because I was thinking how I could actually relate when they were, you know, going into the, like, I mean, I did a lot of Googling when I started watching it, you know, because I was like, how do you clean up? I was like looking at it and going, isn't the Seine one of the most polluted, like, urban bodies of water anywhere? You know, like, it has to be. It's, you know, you've got like centuries of pollution and waste going in there. And, you know, I was Googling the cleanup and I was like, holy shit, because we actually had something similar here, because our major port, which is an international port, you know, for ships going all over the world. But it used to be a basin where all the wastewater emptied out into. So literally, if you, like when I was a kid and I would go down there, it would just smell like salt water and shit. Because that's what it was. And so there was a lot of like disturbance of all around that portion of the island of, you know, the water ecosystems and fish and stuff. And they had to do like a, oh God, I'd say it was 5 or 6 year long cleanup to get all this, the literal shit out of there and all the pollution from all the boats, you know, coming in from internationally. And it's kind of wild. I really related to it. It was really, and it's funny because did you guys ever see the movie Orca, the killer whale?
No, it's on my list though.
Yeah. Right. It's kind of like a cult classic and they actually shot that here.
No way.
So I've always been like very cognizant of like Orca, the killer whale, like just off the coast, you know? But yeah, it's like literally our whole economy has been like devastated by shit like that. Cause you know, it used to be a fishing province and due to both overfishing and, you know, climate catastrophe, which they don't acknowledge as such, it has like radically, like everybody lost their jobs, you know, and then it was like moving on to unemployment or factory work and shit like that. So,
well, that's bleak.
Yeah, it is bleak. Sorry, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here.
No, that's sad. And that's, you know, that's something people don't think about, that there's still, you know, there's still a lot of people who make their living off of the environment.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, then you have like indigenous cultures who, you know, fish and hunt, and it's like the climate disasters are affecting them, like, you know, directly. And it's wild. And it's just like your whole way of life just shattered, essentially.
Well, thanks for that insight. I'm glad we talked about that. I'm glad we were able to pull some sort of climate message a little more profound than what's in the, yes, in the text of the movie we're talking about. Bring some good to this. Bring some action items to the agenda. But yeah, I mean, in very short order, another kind of issue I had, eye candy aside, is once they realize there's maybe a shark in the Seine, our heroes kind of become this interchangeable group of like militarized French police who ride around on a boat. And they're much less interesting to me than like the environmentalists and the researchers and the people trying to understand the shark. They're kind of stock cop military characters who are nice to homeless people, unlike many of the police military characters we see in real life. And yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of focus on them that didn't turn the dial for me.
I feel like it was making the mistake that a lot of movies do of conflating being a cop or like a military figure with being an interesting character. You know, I think that's just such a crime that a lot of movies commit. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah.
Well, and it's been a week since I've seen this movie, and I tried to like refresh myself with Wikipedia today, which was not very helpful. But isn't there some drama with like the activist trying to save the shark and our protagonist trying to kill it, or the other way around? There's some drama there too, but it never felt like it congealed into anything interesting.
No, I think it was that they assumed, the activists assumed, now this was my takeaway from it. The activists assumed that when they were tracking the shark, that they were going to kill it. And so they blocked or turned off the sensor, the GPS,
okay,
whatever they had.
Yeah.
Because they sent cops after it, basically.
With, you know, cops with guns.
And they're like, we're like, we don't know if these cops are equipped to like, you know, gently redirect this shark out of the river.
Yeah. And then the cops assumed that Sophia did it because she was sympathetic to the shark, even though the shark ate her husband, which was none of that added up to me, but that's fine. Little minor plot hole.
I mean, it did eat her husband, right?
Yeah. Yes. All yeah. Right. Like literally her husband and her friends. I was like, why would you think that she was going to like let you not shoot the shark? Like, hello, did you not see all the Jaws movies?
I was hoping that there would be, you know, I was interested in that dynamic and Sophia maybe not wanting to kill the shark, even though it had killed her husband, because she respects the shark, you know. But she was kind of like the Dr. Loomis of Under Paris.
Oh, my God.
Where she's like, you don't understand. The shark has no mercy. Dead eyes.
Or the Quint.
No humanity.
Or the Quint, you know. She's
yeah. Doll's eyes. Well, I guess we could probably get into more details about everyone who gets chomped on by this Lilith. But why don't we review it first?
I think we should. Can I go first?
Yeah, Steven, would you view it, cue it, or screw it?
I would actually give this a cue it if you're a shark movie person, because there's a lot of bullshit out there with these shark movies. I feel like one is made every day somewhere in the world, you know, mostly CGI, and like this movie actually took it made the minimal effort of trying to like build characters and build themes. Was it successful? No, but like this actually felt like a real movie to me, as opposed to the other Jaws knockoffs that I've seen. And I do feel like when things finally get going in like the last 30 minutes, it's kind of fun. So cue it. Mike?
I totally agree. I would definitely also give it a cue it. I'm not going to lie. When you told me what movie we were watching, my bar was like Subterranean.
It was deep under Paris. Oh. Deep under Paris.
It was in the catacombs. And I don't like I said, you know, like Chris as well, I was really impressed by the opening sequence, and I feel like it was surprisingly well done for this sort of like this genre of movie seems to be grinded out fairly cheaply and quickly and with very little regard for, you know, actual filmmaking quality or decent writing. And I don't know, it was shot beautifully. It had some really great moments. Yeah, I'd cue it. I would watch it again if somebody asked me to.
I would give it a screw it. Sorry. I think this is part of my general hardening against films.
Thank you, William Friedkin.
William Friedkin had a lot to do with that, I think. It's just not good. And I think my main complaint is that the shark, despite some lip service from the environmentalist characters, etc., the shark is not treated like an animal. It's treated like, you know, it's actually treated like an effect. It's all CGI. This use of CGI in depicting these sharks is pretty gratuitous. And,
oh, we're going to talk more about that. Trust me.
And silly. It's silly. And the cinematography is great, like Mike said. I mean, we didn't talk about that, but I love the way this movie looks. It's definitely a real movie. They even got the director of Hitman with Timothy Olyphant to direct it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's because, you know, I love nature. I love animals. I love the ocean. I love sharks. I love the way of water. And to have a shark movie that sort of, you know, throws some Charles Darwin at me and then is just like, it may as well have been any sort of asylum film creature. It may have been like fucking Jason in the water. It doesn't matter. It's just that what sort of gray CGI thing can we do to explode this person?
Yeah.
Just a missed opportunity, I thought. That took me halfway there and then mired me down in subplots about how guilty the cop feels for turning his back on his squad in Iraq or something. And I wasn't there for it. Screw it. Sorry. Screw it. Damn it.
Screw it. Damn it. Wow. Screw it. Damn it. With prejudice.
No prejudice, okay. But okay. Just not for me.
Not this time. All right. Well, those are our thoughts on Under Paris. We'll be back in a moment. We're going to go down to the spoiler catacombs, but look us up on social media. We're at Amoncast on most things. Check out our broken website, or don't. Every horror movie on Netflix.com. leave us a review on iTunes. We accept no less than, no fewer than 5 stars.
And don't forget to check out the conversation on our Discord server.
That's the most important part. And I'm getting that book club back together. I was derelict for most of the summer. Mike knows there was a book that broke me and made me unable to read for some time.
I didn't get past page 30 of that one.
I made it only a little bit further. I feel so bad. That seemed like a smart pick. But no, we're doing something a little different over there. We're going to be reading some of Grady Hendrix's Paperbacks from Hell selections. So check out our Discord if you're into reading and you want to read some vintage horror paperbacks.
The link to that, as always, is in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back. We're down here in the spoiler catacombs. This place is fucking lousy with sharks right now. We're going to spoil everything about Under Paris. I want to begin by, we haven't really touched on it much except in our reviews, but the CGI in this movie, there were a couple of shots that looked okay. Most of the time I was thinking, is this better looking than Anaconda, which we also reviewed fairly recently on the show? Is it really better looking than a movie that came out more than 20 years ago?
Yes.
It's still kind of a mess though, right?
It's a mess. It's a mess. And it's you know how, like, famously Spielberg shot the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park the same way he would have shot them if they had actually been flesh and blood, you know? That's why it's one of the reasons the CGI in Jurassic Park isn't terrible, because he was like, well, if this were a real T-Rex, I would shoot it like this. And that's how he shot the CGI T-Rex. This movie's like, we have a shark. What if the shot was from over the water and you see the shark jumping up out of the water vertically towards camera with somebody in its mouth? And then it's like, that shot was so cool. Let's do it 4 times.
That's also like the Deep Blue Sea shot, though, right? Did anybody else think of that watching this?
I haven't seen Deep Blue Sea.
When Sam Jackson gets killed, the shark like jumps out of the water.
What? Spoiler alert.
Sorry, that came out so long ago, Chris. You should have seen it by now.
I mean, we are in the spoiler catacombs, so.
That's true.
Anything goes. Anything goes down here. So who dies in this movie?
Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
Oh, no. Too much. Too much. Way too soon.
Took it too far.
Rosebud is a sled, you guys. Did you know that?
That's it. I'm logging off.
Who dies in this movie? Because I don't even remember.
A lot of people.
A lot of people die? Yeah.
Well, Mike, let's go back to what you were, I think, going to say about what happens to our environmentalists and their world. I mean, first of all, so there's a subplot where there's these Zoomer environmentalists who have, like, their own little, like, Riddler hideout in some theater in Paris. And one of them goes viral. In the way that you do in movies sometimes, because she self-shoots a video where she's like, what's happening to this shark is wrong. And then it's like a whole bunch of scenes of like people getting a push notification that she shared this video.
Oh my God.
And, like, yes. 12-year-olds, right? Like,
yeah. And this results in them going into the catacombs, because I guess Lilith now is dwelling in the catacombs under Paris. That's where we get our title, Under Paris. And so there's like a group of Zoomer environmentalists, quite a lot of them, who go into the catacombs to try to coax Lilith back to the sea where she can be free. What happens, Mike?
Well, so what I equated it with, and I feel like you both hated this, was that scene in the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie.
Where everyone dies.
Yeah.
Yes.
To me, when they gather in the catacombs and you know from the get-go that it's literally just a setup for a bloodbath.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, God, literally, this is just so, Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot coded. And I felt like they were doing the same thing with that because that was really mean towards, you know, the like, what would you have considered them in Texas Chainsaw Massacre? They're probably older than Zoomer. Young millennials.
Oh no, those are Zoomers.
Everybody's got their phone out and like the flashlights on.
Yeah, and you know, like uploading it and live streaming it.
They're like, we're gonna cancel you, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't they say that?
I feel like they it's just like it's so ridiculous because I feel like that was, while I loved that scene, it was obviously very mean and nasty and like kind of condescending towards that whole generation and their, you know.
Well, they deserve it. And, I think that was fair.
Yeah. But it very much made it so that, you know. And they were gentrifiers, right? That's the thing. So that's the other important part.
Yeah.
They deserved it.
That's a great movie. It's very deep. Like, yeah.
It's. That was like, there's not even subtext in that. It's just like all text. But I feel like they did something similar here with like kind of talking down to young people who were concerned for the environment and kind of setting it up that they also deserved it. I don't know how I feel about it. Yeah, I don't know about you
because,
guys.
Because Mika, I think, is the main environmentalist, right? And Mika is a major character up to this point in the movie. And she is the voice of like ocean conservation at all costs and animal liberation. And we need to treat this thing like it's an animal. And she is chomped on gratuitously.
And hysterical.
Which I mean, whatever. If it's for a horror movie, it's fine. I don't know. Now that I'm reading it back, it's pretty funny. Now that I'm like I can condone it because it's like, yeah, it's a killer shark movie. So why don't we have a character who's like, let's be nice to this shark, and then she gets eaten. But it does feel like punching down because she's the character that I, as an audience member, relate to the most, and who has the most to say that's like relevant to the world we actually live in. But yeah, it does. It's funny that you mentioned the Texas Chainsaw Massacre because I was thinking of the rave in Freddy versus Jason. Basically the same scene though, basically where you have like this gathering of young people and then the thing shows up and just goes crazy killing people.
Damn, you like really threw it back there. I didn't. Literally, the only time I ever think of that movie anymore, I think I've like erased it from my memory, is whenever I want to pull out the GIF of Kelly Rowland F slurring Freddy.
Oh my God.
Which I do trot out regularly to, you know, my group chats.
Never forget.
Wow. Yeah, and I think about that movie a lot because he kills all those people and then Jason's mom is like, you're like a big dog that won't stop eating even though he's had enough. And that's the voice I hear in my head when I'm at Taco Bell.
No. Not that. Honestly, though, you're kind of like making me want to revisit it. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, so kudos, because the last time I watched it, I was like, never again.
Well, just listen back to our Amon episode on it. It's better than the movie.
Yeah, we did the whole Freddy franchise, and I think we covered that one.
So. Oh, I remember. I listened to the whole shebang.
Yeah.
Good on you.
But we should mention that here Lilith has a baby. That's the big reveal. Because Sophia's like, oh my God, this isn't just the hideout. This is the nest. And then there's like all this little Liliths. The little Liliths are biting people's arms and legs off. And I mean, just to fast forward a little bit, apparently these sharks are capable of like asexual reproduction in mass. And by the end of this movie, there's like 5,000 Liliths.
There's a lot. Like I said earlier, this river becomes lousy with these creatures. There's so many. It's hard to keep track of.
I was trying to figure out what the timeline on that was, too. I was like, did I fall asleep for like 5 minutes or something? Like, what's going on here?
Well, don't they cut open? Open one of the babies, and it already has a bunch of babies gestating in it at some point. So we know that they're going to multiply like even faster than gremlins.
And that was like my favorite scene in the movie, by the way. Shark autopsy on the Lilith baby. And that's why I'm like, I wish there was more of that. I wish there was more science. I wish there was more marine biologists cutting open a shark and finding something spooky and ooky. I like that stuff a lot more so than like, oh, right, here's our, I don't know why I keep going British when these are French people, but they're like, oh, here's our like underwater demolitions expert. Like he's going to be the hero in the end.
Yeah, when they brought in the guys and they're like, yeah, they're the ones who are going to do the bombs. I'm like, what fucking movie am I watching now? Like, I thought this was going to be a movie about a scientist who's traumatized and, like, you know, maybe get some insight into that. And no, it's like, okay, cool.
I would have loved it if it had been more tongue-in-cheek, I think. And they certainly had the script for it because, like, they introduced two, like, older bomb squad guys who are gonna like put the bombs in the shark nest, and they're like older and grizzled, and you're like, yeah, these are like some convincing guys, and they end up getting like blown up, you know. But it's not played for silliness or comedy in a way that I would have really enjoyed if it had been like there's a scene in the Chris Pine, Denzel Washington, Tony Scott movie Unstoppable. I don't know if you've seen Unstoppable.
I don't even think I've heard of Unstoppable.
Oh, it's a formative film in my canon. Runaway Train, right? They can't stop the train. Sure. And there's this like scene where there's like the news reporters, and they're like, all right, they are sending like Staff Sergeant so-and-so, who just got back from three tours in Afghanistan. He's a special operations something. He's going to come from this helicopter and land on the front of the train and stop this train. And then like he comes down on, he like rappels out of a helicopter and just gets smashed by the train. Oh, and like, that's a good moment. That's good cinema. But I don't know. This movie took all the, like I said, took all the cops too seriously.
Yet another copaganda movie.
Were you happy or titillated when the sharks were eating all the swimmers?
That's what we've been waiting for. That's what we've been waiting for the whole time. And like in my little review, when I said it gets fun in like the last 20, 30 minutes, that's what I'm talking about. I was worried this movie wasn't going to have the sharks eat swimmers, that they were going to save the day.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, I was worried that they were going to think it was like too mean and nasty, but I'm really glad that they went there and beyond. They blew them up too. They got eaten. They got blown up. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah. Because at one point the Paris SWAT team comes in. They're like, "All right, enough of this. We're going to take the shark seriously." And they start firing bullets into the water. And it turns out there's all these bombs down there, which blow up and detonate each other and end up like destroying all of the bridges on the Seine.
And destroying the locks, most importantly. Yes. And that's basically because I didn't know this, but apparently the Paris has locks that separate the river from the ocean and also keep the ocean from backing up and submerging the city. So if you blow up those locks with piles of unexploded World War II ordnance that's in the bottom of the river, turns out you get a submerged Paris with like 10 feet of water everywhere and thousands of sharks in it.
Well, which kind of leads us to, this movie doesn't really have an ending, does it?
Well, that's the ending, and it's like Resident. It's like the Resident Evil ending, where like she walks out of the fucking asylum, and she's like on the streets with the zombies, and she's got the shotgun.
Okay, but we can't. I mean, and that's such an unfair comparison because Resident Evil is like Orson Welles compared to this. Like, come on, that's just mean. That's nasty.
Oh God, I need to see Orson Welles's Resident Evil, or just like 70s Orson Welles. I need to see 70s Orson Welles talking retrospectively about Resident Evil.
He would have dug it.
AI can make that happen for us. I'm sure of it.
Oh God.
Yeah, but we end up with our protagonist and the hot cop just kind of stuck. He, like, has barely survived an attack and is coming back awake. And they're just surrounded by sharks. The river is over. It's flooded. The subways are flooded. There's sharks getting on the subway to go off to their next destination.
Definitely jumping the turnstiles.
Yeah.
Good for them. Good for them.
That's your movie.
And it's, you know, I guess it's a chilling visual, right?
It's supposed to be, yeah, right? It didn't work for me.
You know what's
funny,
though?
It looks pretty good.
Like, right before I hopped on, I always pull the Wikipedia open, so I'm like, oh, I gotta, you know, in case I forget this character's name, or, you know, just so I can have all the facts. And I just sort of, like, glanced over the synopsis, and I realized that when the credits started rolling, I looked down at my phone for a minute and apparently missed this whole graphic that showed that the sharks were now all over the world. And I'm like, what the fuck?
I had the same experience.
Okay, yeah.
Because it had been a week, so I looked at the Wikipedia and I saw that detail about how the sharks like spread throughout the rest of Europe at least. And this wasn't the kind of movie that made me feel like I had to pay attention to the graphics and the credits.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
It didn't earn that.
And it kind of felt, again, comparing it unfavorably to a far superior movie, a similarly dour ending to, like, the Dawn of the Dead remake. That's kind of what it made me think of.
If they're going to go that far, they should have a talking shark that shows up at the end and says, "This is our world now, bitch," and goes back into the water.
Better movie, Chris.
Just to, like, put a point on it.
And just alluding somehow that, you know, pollution caused this. It's like, there we go. Just bring it back to, like, you know, some kind of environmental awareness.
Yeah, the shark is like, "This is our world now, lady. Hold on." And it coughs up a tin can and is like, "I think this belongs to you."
He's got a straw stuck up his nose. Yeah, that'd be
yeah.
Why did you just turn it into a Simpsons episode?
That's what we do.
Shark world, though, you know, that's what we're left with. Like, I wish I had appreciated that graphic on the credits, but yeah, I was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I get severe anxiety at the end of these Netflix movies because as soon as the credits roll, it's going to show me like a fucking trailer for Young Sheldon in 7 seconds if I don't find where I put the remote. So when the credits start rolling, I'm like slapping my pockets, looking under the couch for this remote. I don't want to see the Young Sheldon.
That's fucking real.
You're just
real.
Like getting ready to throw something at your TV just to.
Yeah. The last thing on my mind is what sort of subtleties they're showing me with the graphics in the background of the credits. So.
Yeah, well, before our listeners have to see a preview for Young Sheldon, what are we watching next time? Is it a wheel pick?
Well, no, it's Patrick's turn to pick, but Patrick is in. He's on the other side of the world just like these sharks. He's in Italy right now, so he sent us a jigsaw tape with instructions on it.
Oh my God!
So we're gonna play that.
I'm assuming
tape.
He spent some time in Venice, and if we want to talk about dirty water,
oh,
that's the place to go. Jesus Christ!
I think what's interesting about Under Paris is the French title of it is Sous la Seine, for like under the Seine, but they thought that if they just called it Under the Seine in English, no one would know what they were talking about. So. All right, let's see what sort of fucked up tape Patrick has sent.
Let's do it live.
Hey guys, much as I wanted to go under Paris with you, I'm in Italy right now, so I had to sit this one out. I know I owe you a movie pick, but first I wanted to give the Amon faithful a heads up that some extra special Amon episodes are headed their way this spooky season. I'm getting together some special guests to review Anna Kendrick's directorial debut, Woman of the Hour, as well as an entire franchise that might make you say you'll never go in the Netflix again. But anyways, about that pick for next episode, we're going to be watching... Wait, who are you? How did you get in here? You can't...
Hello, Chris and Steven. I want to play a game. Patrick has spent his entire life defying the existence of God. Now, to survive, he'll have to study God's right-hand man. Patrick has been strapped to a chair in the Vatican. The crucifix suspended above his head will crush him unless he and you watch The Pope's Exorcist. Watch, review, and discuss, or die.
Wow.
The choice is yours.
Well, speaking of William Friedkin, I feel like this is covering some old territory for us, because of course we watched
Father Amort,
the Devil and Father Amort, which was William Friedkin's do-it-yourself documentary on Father Amort, the actual real-life Pope's exorcist, before he was played by Russell Crowe in the film The Pope's Exorcist, which we will apparently be watching for the next episode. I'm just happy I get to use my joke again about how Russell Crowe as the Pope's exorcist throws a phone at the devil. Because Russell Crowe threw the phone at the hotel once.
Oh my god, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, all right. I didn't say it was a good joke, but
if you're of a certain age, you remember that.
Deep cut.
Wow-y. All right. Well, damn.
I'm going to hop on my Vespa.
I thought he got by Timothy Oliphant's hitman when he started to, when he was being screaming in the middle of
I didn't
of
know
that
what was
tape.
Happening. Yeah. Scary stuff.
Spooky. It's scarier than anything we've seen in a movie lately.
All right. So next month, we're watching The Pope's Exorcist. In the meantime, we'll have an episode out about Woman of the Hour, the new Anna Kendrick film. What else is he up to? What was the other thing?
A franchise watch I think I know what it is, but I don't want to talk about it in more detail.
Okay. Well, this has been a pleasure. Thank you, Mike, for joining us. Thank you, Chris, as always, for every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Steven.
I'm Chris.
Bye, it's Mike.
See you next time.